What book are we in? What chapter are we in? Second half of 13. Second half of chapter 13. You see, I've entitled the message 666, the number of his name. I told Susan on the way out here that I had figured it out who the Antichrist was, so I will be revealing that this morning in an exclusive presentation. You don't have that on yet, do you, Craig? Chapter 13. Last week, John talked about the first 10 verses. The beast coming out of the sea, which most commonly is referred to as the Antichrist, and very much likely will be a real live man, not be a beast, it will be a person. And this morning we're going to finish the chapter starting in verse 11, talking about another beast. And this one doesn't come from the sea, but it comes out of the land. And again, we'll just say up front that I believe this very much likely will be a real person. And we'll see some things about the relationship between this second beast and the first one. And the dragon that was prior to that in chapter 12. So, let's begin reading in verse 11. Revelation 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and live. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Now, that's a unique sentence in the book of Revelation. We've seen something similar to that several times. Perhaps it would have the same meaning as the phrase we heard at least eight times at least. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. In other words, pay attention. Here is something that you need to pay attention to. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666, or 666. All right, let's back up. If you have an outline, you see it's not an outline. It's just a timeline with a lot of information on it. And we're going to go through that and try to put some things together. But I want us to go back through this text and just point out a few things about this, all right? So, remember, the first of chapter 13, we had the beast come up out of the sea, who is the Antichrist. He is given power by the dragon, who the dragon, we can don't have to guess at that one in chapter 12. The dragon is Satan, or the devil, Lucifer. But we see in verse 11, then this second beast we're looking at today comes up out of the land. Notice in verse 11 he says he has two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Now, I don't know, I'm not very big. You probably have guessed that by now just from the sermons, on speculating on symbolism that much. But anytime I see the word lamb, it makes me think of either Jesus or innocence or meek or tender or something like that. But it says he has two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Now this, I would say if this symbolizes anything, it might be similar to the phrase that we have, a wolf in sheep's clothing. He may give the appearance of being a sheep, give the appearance of being a religious, God-fearing person, but his speech gives him away. Out of his heart and out of your heart, out of my heart, out of our mouth, proceeds what is really in our hearts. And he may present himself as a lamb, but he speaks as a dragon or as the devil. Verse 12, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. So there is some connection between these two beasts. And he causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. So of the two beasts, which one is subservient to the other? The second is subservient to the first. The second beast that we're looking at today, who comes from the land, his objective, or one of his objectives, is to get the people on the earth to worship not him, but the first beast. He points to the first beast. Now, it's not hard, I think John mentioned this last week, it's not hard to see a similarity between the Christian Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and these three entities, the dragon, the first beast, and the second beast. The dragon corresponding to the Father, the first beast, the Antichrist, referring to or comparable to, or I should say contrasted with Jesus, and the second beast being contrasted with the Holy Spirit, who points to Christ and the worship of Christ. So, we see in verse 12, he causes the earth, and his objective, or at least one of his objectives, is that to cause the people on the earth to worship the first beast. And the first beast, it gives us a piece of information about it from last week, whose deadly wound was healed. The first beast, John, we saw last week, was wounded, a deadly wound, and yet he was miraculously brought back to life or healed. Verse 13, what do we see about this second beast? He performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. How does that sound like? Does that sound familiar? Maybe Elijah, a miracle similar to one Elijah performed in the Old Testament, fire coming down. All right? The question always comes up, is this a real miracle or is this an illusion? Is this sleight of hand? Is this staged? Is this rigged? Okay? I don't, to be frank about it, I don't care. If God wants to let this person perform a legitimate miracle, God is in control of it, whether it's staged or real. All right? The purpose of it is for deception. The purpose of it is to draw men in to the spectacular and to use that to accomplish his ends of worshiping the beast. And people on the earth are all too prone throughout the whole history of the earth, I believe. I haven't been here that long enough to know really, but the whole history of the earth, people are drawn to the spectacular, to the miraculous. It grabs us and pulls us in. Verse 14, and he deceives those. See, there's the idea. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Who granted this second beast the ability, the authority to do these signs? God? We could say the first beast. We could say the dragon. But ultimately, the buck stops where? With God. He was granted ultimately by God to do these miraculous signs. Telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and live. So not only is he his objective to get people on the earth to worship this first beast, but one of the things that they do is make a statue or make an image, make some type of inanimate object to represent this first beast. Verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as who would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So here we see another supposedly miracle, that this second beast has a power to give life to this great image of this first beast. Okay, we have the same questions that we just asked before. Is this a legitimate miracle? Did this image really come to life and speak and be able to cause people to be killed? Okay, my answer again is the same. It really doesn't matter a whole lot to me. If God wants to let that happen, then God can let it happen. We certainly live in a day where technology is such that it could be staged, I'm sure, with very convincingly. But regardless, this is part of the agenda. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. No one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, why would this be a part of the agenda? Why would this be happening? Okay, I don't know for sure. It may be simply just to force people, to force their hand, to force them to decide who are you going to serve. I tend to think that it's a dual purpose. That's one of them. But it comes at us, or will come at the world, under a different guise. And that being the prior 2 or 3 or 4 years that is the earth has been up to that time, where there has been war, there's been famine, there's been pestilence, there's been disease, there's been death, there's been cosmic disturbances, and it probably, there's a lot of rationing going on. So it may come at the world through this idea of rationing. You have to buy ration stamps. We saw, or I didn't see it, but this happened in World War II in the United States, and the war never touched our soil. That's a common thing in dire situations where you buy some type of mark or some type of stamp or there's some type of something given to you that permits you to buy just the necessities of life. And that may be included in how this plays itself out. Notice that he says the number of his name. Now, there's something interesting here, back in this day, and I don't think it's merely in Greek culture, I can't remember now, but people use numbers to signify names, or they use names to signify numbers. And a letter of the alphabet would equal a certain numeric number, and then you would have let your name, like for instance, if we were doing it in English, you let A, you, or you, this would be one way you could do it, you let A be 1, B be 2, C be 3, D 4, etc., all the way, Y would be 25, Z would be 26. And then I would take my name, John, the J would be something like 11 or so, the O would be whatever it would be, 15 or 16, the H would be 9 or 10, the N would be 17 or 18. I add those three numbers together, and that's the number that is signified by the word John. This is something that was used, so it's not, it wasn't, I don't think, would have been uncommon to John, the Apostle John. It wouldn't have been uncommon to the people who were reading this text. Verse 18 then says, this is something that I had not really caught over the years. It says, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. That sentence admonishes us, it appears. It encourages us, it seems to me, to figure it out. Okay? For it is the number of a man. His number is 666. Now, the problem is that this is 2,000 years later. We've got Greek for one language. We've got Latin for another language that has influenced this. You've got in the world today, who knows how many languages that people who would read this would be reading it in their own language. How is that possible? Okay? I don't think it is. And I'm not saying that it's not important. I think when the time comes and the generation who lives through this time, perhaps we'll have a little more better clues as to how to figure this out than we have. I have heard in my lifetime a number of people who were suggested as being their name adding up to 666. Have you heard names? Okay, tell me one you've heard.
Ronald Reagan?
I got to use all three names? Ronald Wilson Reagan. Henry Kissinger. Anybody else heard any?
Chuck Swindoll.
Okay. Anybody ever heard Nero? That's not a contemporary name. Okay. Now, last night, I had too much spare time on my hands. So I started working through some numbers. And I figured out something that makes it easy, and this may be hard to explain. But, and I had heard Kissinger, Henry Kissinger. And I'd heard that here's how you do it. You let A be 6, B be 12, C be 18, so it's multiples of 6 going through the alphabet. Everybody follow that? Okay, now letting them be 6 is seems more right because 6 is the number we're concerned with, right? So that seems reasonable. So I went through the alphabet and wrote out all those numbers and then added Henry Kissinger up and it came to a little over 1,000. Okay, I added just the word Kissinger and it came to 666. Okay. Now, that sounded real good back when Nixon was president and Kissinger was, Kissinger probably, if he became the Antichrist, it would be a miracle. He's a little old, isn't he? Is he still alive? He is alive, isn't he? Okay. But he's pretty getting pretty old, so that's not as appealing as it was back then. But I've done Obama. That didn't work. Okay? Here's something. If you want to just play with this, you can. But I tried Clinton. I think I did try Hillary Clinton and Clinton. It didn't work. But here's the idea. What multiple do you make of each number B? Do you make it B6, A6, B12, multiples of 6? Do you make them be just 1? A1, B2, C3? Do you make it be a, can you let it be a multiple of 2? See what I'm saying? AB2, BB4, CB6. How do you know what to do? All right? How do you know to do it in English? All right? But here's, let me give you a little idea. If you don't just mess with it, write your ABCs, and then write beside them using 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So A is 1, B is 2. Okay? And then do whatever name you want to check out, see what it adds up to. If it's 111, then your multiple is 6 to get to 666. Right? If your number comes up to be 222, your multiple is what? 3. So you don't have to work with the big numbers. You can figure out your multiple if you just do it that way. If it doesn't come out even, then, you know, that's not good. Or maybe it is good. All right, you know, I could be the Antichrist, or my number could be 666 if you multiplied my name by like 4.76. Okay, that's probably not, I'm probably not it. Okay, that probably didn't work. It's interesting that the name Susan if you use 9 as a multiple, the name Susan comes out to be 666. So I'm sleeping. I slept last night with one eye open. Yeah, really. Now, Nero. And I didn't check out all of the formula, and I didn't bring it with me to tell you. But you can take Nero's Greek name, and don't ask me to repeat what it is. I don't know. It has 7 or 8 letters. And I'm not sure what multiple they assigned the Greek alphabet to come up with this. But his Greek name adds up to 666. Have you ever read details of the grotesque, perverted things that Nero did? I wouldn't even repeat them here. I mean, it was awful. Perverted stuff. There are supposedly, and I'm going by what I've read, there are fragments of the Latin scriptures that have this portion of Revelation in it. And instead of 666, it is 616. And supposedly, you can take Nero's name in Latin and assign whatever they assign the letters to, and add up his name in Latin, and it comes to 616. Now that's interesting. Those who hold to the idea that Revelation, everything in Revelation was completed by AD 70, would point to that as being Nero being this, the Antichrist, and the fulfillment of that way back in AD 60 something. All right? That may be the case, but some of those same people would also hold to something we see in the scriptures in more places than one, of there being multiple fulfillments of the same thing. That perhaps Nero was a close fulfillment of that prophecy. But just as perhaps, and I believe it is so, there is yet a future fulfillment of that same prophecy, of which Nero perhaps is just a small shadow. Okay? So, there's where we are. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I think you knew. I was just joking. But I don't know who the man is. He may be living. He may not be living. I don't know. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. But I do believe when that day comes, when we are in there, or whoever is there, in the middle of that seven-year period, and things are getting rough, and there is a world leader who rises to power, the church, the Christian church, and Jesus in Matthew 24 in particular, admonishes people to watch, to be careful, because people will come in my name. Many people will come saying they are the Christ, and they are admonished to watch and to look and to be discerning. Okay, now look at the timeline. And this timeline might have to be adjusted, or I may want to adjust it in a few weeks as my understanding continues to grow. But if you look at the timeline, see if you can follow me. There's one line that goes all the way across horizontally that represents the 70th week of Daniel. Everybody can see where I'm at? Or the seven-year period immediately preceding the second coming of Christ. So from the very left side of the diagram to the very right side of the diagram is the seven-year period, the 70th week of Daniel. You see, I've got it divided into two halves, represented by the vertical dotted line. You see, underneath the main timeline, there are four time designations on each one. 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days, a time, times, and half time. These are four designations that are used to describe 3.5 year period. And I put them all there because sometimes some verses you'll see one, some you'll see another. We started out our study in the book of Revelation after we got through the seven churches with the seals, the seven seals. You see the first seal there on the very left side, and I have put an ending, a boundary at the start of this first seal and the start of the second seal. Now, it's not precise, but my boundary is there to designate that this first seal, its duration is a short period of time. It's a short peace that is brought by a covenant that someone makes, and he is commonly referred to as the Antichrist. We see him mentioned in Daniel chapter 9, and it looks like it is the same person that we will see, we saw last week, that John talked about. But it's a short-lived peace. So you see I've got a short designated time for the first seal. Then the peace ends, and the second seal is open, and war takes place. You'll notice that I have the ending of that war open-ended. I don't know how long that war lasts. I have a feeling that it's an ongoing conflict, man against man, nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, brother against brother, for the rest of the time period. But shortly after that war ensues, the third seal is open. Third seal being famine. A famine that comes as a result of war and death. Again, it is unopened because the famine just doesn't shut off. You can't just have a famine and then turn off the switch and it stops. It is a slow process getting out of it. And if the very thing that is causing the famine is ongoing, then the famine will be ongoing. And the war is what causes the famine. The fourth seal, pestilence, disease, and death, a common result of famine and war. Again, those three things are ongoing, unending. I'm not sure if we know or will know by the end of the book of Revelation if they had an end. I kind of doubt if they did. The fifth seal is open, and this being persecution of Israel or persecution of the church, or more than likely both. All right, this takes place. I think it begins to take place prior to that midpoint. I think also it begins to take place in a soft manner. A persecution that is, I don't know any other word to use, but soft. It is a light persecution. It is one step at a time to see what the world will put up with. Will the world put up with the government persecuting the church in this way? Will the world embrace the government persecuting the nation of Israel or the Christians in this manner? And whatever the world will wink at and give a nod to will be what is enacted. And it will be one slow step, then another step, a little bigger step, as the persecution begins to grow and as the world is turned against the church and turned against Israel. We see that now, don't we? We do. It may be through social issues like abortion. It may be through social issues like homosexuality, where the church is marginalized and the church is challenged and the church is ridiculed and the church is mocked and the church is blamed for things that come down the pike. And so that persecution begins. At the same time, notice the dotted blue line at the bottom corner. This person, if he is the Antichrist that is involved in making that peace that the first seal comes along, he is living. And perhaps he's in some type of authority. He's a nationally known, a figure of some sort, perhaps just as a leader in a particular nation initially or some such, but begins to grow in people's awareness of him, begins to grow in his influence. And you see, I've got that signified by the dotted line becoming heavier and heavier and longer until at the midpoint of the 7-year period, we see he is given power. And this is what John talked about last week. He is given power for 42 months. He's given power 1260 days. Where is that 1260 days? I think it is the second half. You can see on there. He's given the power for the 42 months. I think that's the second half of that 7-year period. The false prophet that I looked at today is right there with him. The 42 months, I think, correspond as well to the second half. We saw in chapter 12 the woman who was nourished and was encouraged to, had to flee and hide in the wilderness, and she was protected in the wilderness. And we could pretty well settle on that that woman was a reference to, symbolic reference to the nation of Israel. And it says she was nourished there and protected there for 1260 days. I think that 1260 also pretty much corresponds with the time of power of the Antichrist and the false prophet. We saw back in chapter 12 or 13 or maybe 11, the two witnesses. Yes, in chapter 11. The two witnesses are given their prophesy for 1260 days. Now, I don't know. You see, I've got that slid back, because I'm not sure where their 1260 days is. I want to make it be either precisely the second half or precisely the first half. but I don't know why that's necessary. So I've got it slid, you see, a little ways, because they are put to death. They are killed. And they lay in the street, you remember, for 3.5 days while the world mocks them and while the world rejoices and celebrates their death. Why is the world celebrating the death of these two witnesses? Because they pointed out their sin. Because these two witnesses are prophesying and testifying to the world about God and about judgment. And the world does not want to hear it. And the world does not want to hear it to the extent. And we've got technology where the whole world can see somebody laying in the streets in Jerusalem, don't we? And the world does not want to hear it to the extent that they purposely leave them in the street for 3.5 days to mock them, to party, to celebrate the death of these two men who are telling them and warning them about the judgment of God. When it's at that point, the governments of the world can pretty much do what they want to Christians and get away with it, can't they? They will have the blessing of the people if they're concerned about that. God brings the two witnesses back to life and at the same time escorts them to heaven, and the world has to marvel. But the world repents not. Okay, back up to the very top of the diagram. We've seen the fifth seal going across. Then there's the sixth seal. The sixth seal is a series of cosmic disturbances. I think that these are dramatic. I think they are something worse than the world has ever seen. But compared to what is coming, they're pretty tame. Right, I have an ending on them. I think that this, in fact, I think it's probably shorter than I even show it there. I just had to have room to write the stuff in there. But I would doubt if these cosmic disturbances lasted over, I mean, I don't know, anywhere from a week to a month, maybe 2 months. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a shorter period of time. We saw that sixth seal, and then before the opening of the seventh seal is where John and I are presenting this as the time of the rapture. The fifth seal, the persecution of at least the church part of it, ends because the church is raptured. The church is raptured. If this is the case, and this is how we're presenting it, because what is coming is God's wrath. It is severe judgment from the hand of God. Now, if what I'm saying is accurate, then the church is present during the time that the Antichrist is in power. Okay? Now, isn't the church admonished to watch out for this person? Okay? Look in chapter 13, Revelation chapter 13. Verse 7. Revelation 13, verse 7. This is talking about the beast that came from the sea, or the Antichrist. It was granted to him to make war with who? The saints. Who are the saints? Christians, right? Okay. So this beast who comes up was given power to make war with the saints. Is the beast on earth? Yes, the beast is on earth. Where are the saints? On earth. So it seems to me that the saints are present when this beast is given power for 42 months, at least for part of that time. There is an overlapping of the presence of the saints on earth with the power of this beast. because the beast is given power to make war with the saints. And that goes on for an unspecified period of time. I don't know when that fifth seal ends. I don't know, or the fifth seal. I don't know when the sixth seal ends. I don't know when the opening of the seventh seal is, but it seems like that it's at that point, if the church experiences rapture from God's wrath, it is at that point. The seventh seal is open, and things happen just quickly, it seems to me. I've got these trumpets signified as very short periods of time. You see the first trumpet, a third of the green vegetation is destroyed, the second trumpet, and I don't know that these overlap. There again, I had to overlap them just to get them on the diagram. The second trumpet, a third of the sea is polluted. The third trumpet, a third of the fresh water is poisoned. Fourth trumpet, a third of the heavens are diminished. The fifth trumpet, it specifies, is a five-month period. Okay? And this was what I believe to be demonic torment. It was the locust. Remember the locust we talked about? I think those are demonic beings. It says they own the earth and they sting and torment men. And men want to die. Men try to die, but they cannot die. God's judgment. Why is it that they can attempt to commit suicide and not be successful? Because God holds their hand. Because God does not let it happen. It is torment, demonic torment. This, anything that has happened prior to this pales in comparison to what's going on. Then the sixth trumpet, demonic war, the 200 million man army. I don't know that these are demons, but I would suggest to you that they perhaps are. Perhaps there are real men there as well from wherever countries may come together. But 200 million is a lot of people. And if they're not demonic, if they are all human, 200 million human soldiers, they are influenced by demonic beings, by demonic forces. We saw that from the four creatures that accompany them and precede them. So here, here at this point, men do die. Lots of death. But you see how that there is overlapping of these things. The persecution of the church in the fifth seal and the sixth seal. This is going on, it seems it has to be going on at the same time that the Antichrist is in power. That he has power. The false prophet, or the second beast, false prophet is in power as well and in a position to influence what goes on. And together they are promising solutions to the chaos and the catastrophe that is happening on the earth. And at the same time, they are persecuting the Christians who supposedly caused it all. And they are doing all of these things pointing to themselves as to be objects of worship, at least for the Antichrist. Okay. Anybody have any questions?
Who is it?
I don't know. I don't know. No, that's in the coming up, I believe, isn't it, John? Now, I think that's a different deal. We'll see. There's one question I didn't know the answer to. Anybody got any other questions? All right. Would our ushers come for the offering this morning? And the worship team come.